From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. New technology is enabling meteorologists to more accurately forecast the weather. We'll hear about some of those advances from Chris Vaccaro, Public Affairs Director for the National Weather Service in Washington, D.C. And the Florida Public Radio Network is collaborating to bring storm information to everyone who can pick up a broadcast signal. Our guest is meteorologist Jeff Huffman from the University of Florida. Also here in Southwest Florida and on the state's East Coast, officials, environmentalists, and others are united against freshwater releases from Lake Okeechobee down the Coosawhatchee and St. Lucie Rivers. They say they're wreaking environmental havoc, but the Army Corps of Engineers, which controls releases, says they're necessary to protect the integrity of the aging dike that surrounds the lake. We're joined by the Corps' Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Greco and Rayanne Wessel of the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Valerie Alker. On today's program, protecting the aging dike around Lake Okeechobee, but at what cost to the environment? Can we strike a balance? But first, the National Weather Service has upgraded its supercomputers. They can now perform 213 million calculations per second. Nicknamed TIDE, the supercomputer in Reston, Virginia, and its Orlando backup are up to 213 teraflops, or TFs, from 90. Here to tell us what this means and how this will help protect lives and property during a hurricane and other storm events is Brian Lamar, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service Forecasting Office in Tampa. Brian, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. And we are having a slight technical difficulty right now. We'll have Brian on the air with us in just a moment. You are listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Also joining us today on the program a little later, we'll have meteorologist Jeff Huffman from the University of Florida. You are listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Later on in the program, we'll be hearing from Rayanne Wessel from the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation. The number to call to participate in today's program is 877-428-8255. We'll be bringing our guest to you in just a moment. And I do believe we have on the phone with us from the National Weather Service Forecasting Office in Tampa, meteorologist in charge, Brian Lamar. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Hey, Valerie. Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Hey.
definitely an exciting topic to learn more about the advances in computer technology for hurricane forecasting.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, what is a teraflop?
It's basically a million times a thousand. So basically, we're looking at a trillion calculations per second that these computers can do on any single point. And it actually helps meteorologists and anyone else using our data to forecast the weather. So we're looking at an increase earlier this year. The National Weather Service used to have about 90 teraflops, 90 trillion calculations per second, and we increased to over 200. So it's really helping us out.
So, but the word teraflop itself, does that mean, okay, tera means earth, 213 flops around the earth or what?
No, actually, think about it as computer technology. You think of like your cell phone, you have so many megabytes of storage, and that's going to be a megabyte is a million bytes. And what we're looking at with a tera is going to be a trillion. So in the computer world, a flop basically means a floating operation per second. So a teraflop is going to be a trillion, basically a trillion mathematical calculations every single second. And so we increased to over 200 for our National Weather Service modeling capabilities.
And so is that over the nationwide? It's performing all those functions per second?
It is. It's basically the computer model technology that the National Weather Service uses every single day, and that's available to public and private sector partners, media, other government agencies, and other countries across the world are able to use our computer technology. So it's the same computer models, but now they're have more power to crunch the numbers and produce more detailed forecasts in a faster time period.
I've noticed that this year when I've been watching the Weather Channel, when, you know, they get a big audience when storms are forming, they're talking about areas of invest, which I assume is investigation, but it's kind of new to the nomenclature that's shared with the audience. Is that true, too? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it is. And basically due to social media and blogging capabilities, the public has really been able to see a lot of behind-the-scenes information that we've been looking at for years. And you're right, the invest is really an area of interest or investigation that the National Hurricane Center, which is part of the National Weather Service, is looking at for potential development. And the different stages that come after an invest could very well be a tropical depression, and that system develops further and gets winds of around 39 miles per hour, becomes a tropical storm, and we give it a name. And if it increases further in strength up to about 74 miles per hour, it keeps that name but becomes a hurricane.
So what clues you guys at the Weather Service and women, men and women at the Weather Service, that an area is indeed worthy of investigation? I guess it's some of the data that you have collected with your supercomputers.
It is. A lot of it is going to come from satellite information, and the satellites first came about in 1960. That was one of the first polar orbiting satellites that we used, launched back in April of 1960. And since then, there's been a lot of advances in satellite technology, and all that data also gets fed into the supercomputer models that we're talking about and that have recently been upgraded to higher, you know, number crunching capacity. And so what we do is we look for areas of thunderstorm activity in, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, out in the far eastern Atlantic, even off of Africa, like we did last week with that disturbance that, you know, first started off as an invest, then it became a tropical depression, and then became Tropical Storm Aaron, which was, you know, looking like it was going to be moving farther west, but eventually it weakened and, you know, pretty much fell apart. So we're looking for areas of thunderstorm activity over the Atlantic or the Gulf of Mexico, and that have light wind shear, because the lighter the winds, the greater the chance that the tropical system may develop.
What sort of backup systems do you have at the Tampa Bay? You're in Ruskin, actually, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, the Tampa Bay National Weather Service. We're located in Ruskin, and we cover 15 counties from Lee County all the way up to Levy County and out 60 nautical miles into the Gulf of Mexico. Each of the National Weather Service's 122 offices across the country have backup offices. We have a primary backup, a secondary backup, and even a tertiary backup for the number three. And for Ruskin, our primary backup, if we were to go down or if we selectively went down, say a tornado was approaching the office, which almost happened during Tropical Storm Andrea this June, around 2 in the morning, we almost had to refer back to our backup office, which is in Melbourne. So the National Weather Service in Melbourne, Florida, is our primary backup, and the services that we provide, the forecast, the warnings, would be transparent to the public, because everything would come out of that office. And during hurricane situations, if an office were experiencing or expected to experience a direct landfall, then they would send a certain number of people to their backup office and to make sure that there is no interruption in service. Now, our secondary backup is in Miami. So the Weather Forecast Office, which is co-located with the National Hurricane Center in Miami, is our secondary backup. And I'm sure everyone's thinking, okay, well, Florida, when a hurricane comes, pretty much the whole state is under the gun a lot of the time. So why would we want to back up to, you know, an office that's 100 or 200 miles away? Our third backup is Lake Charles, Louisiana. So on the northwest side of the Gulf of Mexico, that would be our third backup. And so there's a lot of redundancy when it comes to the National Weather Service to make sure that there is no break in service.
Now, you also there, you have, I assume you have backup generators and you're hardened and all that sort of stuff, so that can you hang out at the National Weather Service headquarters in Ruskin? Can you have a skeleton crew there to withstand a Category 5 hurricane? And at what elevation are you?
Yeah, you're right, Valerie. And we do have backup generators, diesel fuel that'll keep us running for a week, week and a half. Which would typically be the period that an office could be down or without power for a certain period. But we would be up and running. We had backup transmitters for our NOAA weather radio, which is, you know, known as the voice of the National Weather Service. When power goes down, people could have a NOAA weather radio, battery-operated. They could still receive weather information from us. and we have supplies of food, the meals ready to eat. You know, a lot of military personnel would be used to that phrase, the MREs, if you will. So we have supplies of food for the people that would be here 24 hours a day. And also, as you mentioned, our elevation, we're only about two blocks away from a Category 5 storm surge zone. So we're out of the storm surge area, but not by far. And we do have a reinforced room in our building. Every National Weather Service office has pretty much what's known as a tornado shelter. And that is mainly there to help against wind damage, not really for flooding. But again, we would be safe in the building. And the building itself, at least here in Ruskin, is rated up to Category 3. So we're looking at about 120, 125 miles per hour, and then the structure of the building could be compromised. We would go into our storm shelter. But if we were ever expecting a situation like that, we would refer back to our backup offices, and we would send about five people to that office to provide support.
Brian, you mentioned in an email that we exchanged yesterday that these days social media is doing, you know, a lot of the work in getting information out to the public in the event of a hurricane. However, it begins with you, right? It does begin with the National Weather Service.
It does, and social media, I'm glad you brought it up, because that's one of our biggest advertising, marketing, service provision mechanism that we've seen over the past 2 years. And our number of fans, we're over 8,000 fans. I think we're about 8,300 fans as of this morning. And it really helps us get the information out to people that either may not have a NOAA weather radio, or people that are on their smartphones, on their computers, you know, looking at social media, they're able to get information live. So for the first time ever in our history, we're actually able to interact live with the public. And also, it's a two-way street. We're going to provide information out to people who receive it, and they're going to send us information. And over the past couple of days, I know you and I were talking about the classic, you know, Florida summertime thunderstorms that hit the Fort Myers area, that hit all of Florida this time of year due to the sea breeze collisions. We're able to get photographs from people real time that are taking pictures from their smartphones, sending us a picture of a funnel cloud, a water spout, hail, rainbows, whatever it may be. It's able to give us information we need to issue warnings and help protect lives of others in the path of those storms.
So all the supercomputers in the world can't do what a sort of an army of people out there with smartphones can do.
It's actually part of a much larger puzzle. And so it's basically what we call the integrated warning system. And that includes the public. That includes people that are out there, storm spotters, weather spotters, people that just love weather that are going to share information to us. So social media actually allows them to engage with us and also share information with us. The supercomputers allow us to provide the accurate forecasts and faster time periods for them.
However, during a prolonged power outage, you know, when people have lost their power all over the place, it would seem to me that radio would be the only game in town, a battery-operated radio, unless you want to go, you know, run your car engine to charge your cell phone or something like that. Radio does, and I assume will continue to play an integral role in disseminating information during a prolonged weather event and the aftermath thereof.
No, you're right. You're right 100%. And radio is going to be most likely up and running when possibly television stations are down. You lose power. You're going to lose battery on your cell phone. Cell phone towers could be down, even if you have a charged up cell phone. And so radio is going to be one of our biggest elements that we're going to reach people with. So definitely a NOAA weather radio, not very expensive to purchase, probably around $20, $30 from a local electronic store or supermarket carry NOAA weather radios. And also, you know, we work with dedicated teams known as amateur radio operators. So ham radio operators work with us to make sure that information is sent out during emergencies. And so during the catastrophic hurricanes that we've seen hit Florida or other parts of the country, such as, you know, Hurricane Sandy, Irene, or Ike, you know, over the past handful of years, ham radio operators have worked with media and also emergency response officials to make sure that life-saving information gets out to people who need it.
Last week, August 13th, marked the 9th anniversary of Hurricane Charley. The storm changed course and strengthened from a Category 2 to a Category 4 in what seemed like less than an hour. Will the new supercomputers do a better job of letting us know where the storm is going and how intense it will be?
I think you nailed two critical points. You mentioned where it's going, so that refers to track forecasting, and you also mentioned intensity. Now, one we're really good at, the other we're still trying to improve. Track forecasting, we've really made some significant accomplishments in improving where a storm may go, when it's going to form, where it's going to go. And in terms of intensity, what we call rapid intensification of a tropical storm or a hurricane, that's something that we're still conducting a lot of research on in partnership with, you know, academic partners and also researchers within, you know, the scientific community. That's something that we're still trying to work on. But yes, the computer modeling capability, you know, definitely is going to help, you know, help us help others, basically. And there's a model called the HWRF, to throw out one of our famous governmental acronyms, but it's the Hurricane Weather Research and Forecasting Model. And this actually is benefiting from the increases in computing power that we did earlier this year. And you mentioned Hurricane Charley, you know, the ninth anniversary on Friday the 13th of, you know, August 2004. We used social media to really, you know, provide a lot of information this year, just commemorating that anniversary. And the last time Florida was hit by a hurricane was Hurricane Wilma, October 24, 2005. So it's been several years that the state has seen an impact from a hurricane. But as we've seen this year with Tropical Storm Andrea, and especially last year with Tropical Storm Debbie, you don't need a hurricane to receive significant flooding, fatalities from tornadoes, and also wind damage.
And we have now joining us on the line from WRUF at the University of Florida, meteorologist Jeff Huffman. Jeff, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good morning, Valerie. Thanks. Pleasure to be here. And good morning. Is that Brian on the other line?
Brian Lamar, the one and only.
Awesome.
Hey, good morning. Thanks.
So, Brian, or Jeff, you are here to tell us a little bit about, you know, we all work together with the National Weather Service, but this year Florida's public radio stations have joined forces and received some funding from the state to become the focal point of information during a hurricane, especially as when other power sources go down. Can you explain to us how this works?
I'd be happy to. And you and Brian both have mentioned so eloquently the importance of radio. You know, the director of FEMA, Craig Fugate, last year encouraged right before hit that folks should have those battery operated or crank up radios, because as we found out during significant weather events, the radio is the only reliable source. I think that was also very evident after the extreme event in Joplin with the tornado hitting a couple of years ago. I know I learned from that from my days up in Missouri. But we are strengthening the ability for us through these public radio stations to communicate and pass along not only just weather information, as Brian has mentioned, that the National Weather Service does send out, but we're also aiming to strengthen the coordination and the communication of the information from our emergency operations centers around the state as well. So we are endeavoring and building a storm-proof storm, if you will, here in Gainesville, Florida, which is well inland, away from the coastline, and it'll have redundancy power times two, and we'll be able to communicate weather information, emergency management information to our listeners of public radio across the entire state in the event that an extreme event would occur in terms of a landfalling hurricane.
And I wanted to mention, and I don't know if you know this either, Brian, but the Florida Public Radio Network of stations, I think we begin in, which is further to the west, Pensacola or Panama City? Anyway, all the way from the Panhandle, and I know that WLRN provides service down to the Florida Keys. So Florida Public Radio is really a service that is free, and it is available to, I guess, just about anyone in the state of Florida with a battery operated, $10 radio. So that's a good deal.
Yeah, that sounds like a really, you know, great service, and it kind of complements off of NOAA Weather Radio. That some people may not have NOAA Weather Radio, but again, it's another way to receive weather information. And these days, with how active the weather patterns have been, the more information out there, the better.
And Brian, in the event of a major storm bearing down on Florida, there's collaboration on many levels, are there not? And I know I'm somewhat experienced I'm somewhat familiar with that just from working the hurricanes that I have in the past here at WGCU. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about all that level of communication and how that includes folks like Jeff Huffman at WRUF in Gainesville serving all the public radio networks?
You're right, and Jeff mentioned it as well. It's really a partnership between everyone in the, you know, the meteorological community and the weather community, including academia, media, and emergency management, which includes, of course, you know, city and state and federal officials. But the National Weather Service really serves as the foundation of providing information to people who need to make decisions when seconds count. And so, as Jeff mentioned, emergency response officials play a vital role in that. And so it's our job, you know, for Jeff and I to make sure that not only do we provide them accurate weather information, but we help them in the communication process. And so via radio, we're able to reach, you know, thousands, if not millions of people, and also via social media. You know, we're able to reach a demographic that we as the National Weather Service have never been able to reach before. You know, we've been relying on NOAA Weather Radio, which still serves a very vital role in saving lives during threatening weather. But again, I think we're seeing technology really helping us in ways that we never imagined before.
And Jeff, how's the Florida Public Radio Network using social media to get the word out?
Well, we are building out the ability to help all of our local public radio stations use their social media in a way that basically the content would come from our storms. Well, originally from the Weather Service, passed along to our different public radio stations' social media accounts and websites. So we're kind of building a central hub of where content can be shared and used by all the different local stations, and that will include social media, possibly even an app for phones, smartphones. And so we think social media, just as Brian mentioned, is a very valuable tool for our listeners when they're not, you know, listening in on the radio. And as also Brian mentioned, the feedback or the information that we get back from our listeners are important when we're tracking significant weather as well.
And last year I downloaded and did a little story on it. That's why I downloaded it. It was a handy little app from the American Red Cross that beeps at me every time, you know, we get a tropical storm warning or something. All of a sudden, it's an app that's sitting around there on my phone, and all of a sudden, it comes alive. And do you find that apps are helpful as well along the weather spectrum?
I think they're very, very valuable. It's always up to the user to make sure that, and it's all up to us to educate the users on how to set those up and use them appropriately, you know, so that you are alerted to the most important information. But I think they can be very valuable, especially late at night, just like a NOAA Weather Radio can alert you to a tornado warning while you're sleeping. Late at night, sometimes your smartphone can do that as well if you happen to be asleep when a significant or severe weather event is on its way to your location.
Brian, what's it like inside the National Weather Service office when you're in the sights of an approaching storm?
I think the best way to describe that would be two words: organized chaos. And I think what we're looking at is, you know, we're here 24 hours a day, whether it's sunny outside or a Category 3, 4, or 5 hurricane is coming our way. And so typically we train throughout the year to make sure that we handle stress and we're able to provide information when the public needs it. And so during a tornado outbreak or during a hurricane landfall, we're going to have pretty much half the office on one shift at one time and then half the office, you know, off at one time. And so we're going to rotate. We're going to work 12-hour shifts. Right now we work between 8 or 9 hour shifts, depending on the time of day. But we pretty much increase the number of people on one shift by about 3. And it's either myself and 2 of our other managers that will be on for media or emergency management interactions. And our forecasters will be issuing hurricane warnings in collaboration with the National Hurricane Center, and also doing specialized briefings with our emergency managers and media partners to make sure that they have the credible information in order to reach even more people than we can.
And a final question, and I guess I'd like you both to answer this, and a quandary we fall into here at WGCU when we're reporting on storms. We're also worried about our families. We're worried about our homes. Do you both have those well secured in advance so you know that you can focus all your attention on your work? Brian?
I think it is a good question, because it's what I like to send out every year around March or April. I'll send a message to, you know, the folks here at the National Weather Service in Tampa, and really just to use that time before hurricane season to put together a hurricane kit. And I know we all preach about it, we talk about it in interviews and on outreach talks, but do many of us actually, you know, practice what we preach? And so what I like to do is, you know, typically I'll go grocery shopping once a week, and a month or two before hurricane season, I'll just pick up an extra item or two each week and try to build that kit. And I'll just put it in the closet or the pantry, if you will, and I'll buy an extra case of water each week. I'll buy cans of, you know, tuna fish, or I'm a peanut butter fan, so I'll get peanut butter and protein bars. And just really space it out, because when a hurricane watch is issued, that's not the time to do it, because a lot of people are going to be rushing to the stores trying to get supplies, and you're not going to be able to get what you want, and you're going to have increased stress levels and frustration because of traffic and things like that. So really plan ahead. It does not take much time. Just space it out for a month or two. Start in April, finish in May. You're going to be good to go before what is Florida's actually first peak of the hurricane season is in June. And for the past couple of years, we've seen that. Last year with Tropical Storm Debbie, and this year, to a lesser degree, with Tropical Storm Andrea. So again, hurricane season runs from June to November, and in Florida, June and October tend to be peaks in our season.
And Jeff, you've got 20 seconds to tell me, are you ready for hurricane season?
I am ready. It's a little different in terms of the preparation this far inland, but we tell our students here at the large University of Florida campus and a lot of our audience, remember 2004, these storms can come inland. They can cause damage, especially falling trees and power lines. A lot of folks in this community rent. They need to be reminded that renter's insurance is important. If a tree would fall or something would come through a window in your apartment, obviously you could sustain damage this far inland.
Jeff Huffman, thank you so much for joining us. Also, Brian Lamar, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service office in Tampa. This is Gulf Coast Live. When we come back, Lake Okeechobee, fresh water releases, the environment, and you. Stay with us.
We'll be right back.